Welcome to episode 80 of the Family Time Q&A podcast. I am your host, Jerry, from TheRealJerryDugan.com, and you're listening to a weekly podcast that is about family living with actual family members talking with each other. Except this week, Olivia, Emma, and Jacob are off to school, and we just didn't have time during the week to record. Plus, February is Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month, and I wanted to bring on a special honorary Dugan for this episode. So to kick off February, and especially to honor Teen Dating Violence Awareness and Prevention Month, I asked Dr. Jeff Temple to come on board for this episode. Now, Dr. Temple is an associate professor, licensed psychologist, and director of behavioral health and research in the Department of OBGYN at the University of Texas Medical Branch. Wow. His research focuses on interpersonal relationships with a particular focus on teen dating violence. That's why he's on this show. His research has been funded through National Institute of Justice, National Institutes of Health, the Centers for Disease Control, and the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health. He has nearly 100 scholarly publications in a variety of high-impact journals, including the Journal for the Association... Wait, the American Medical Association? Sorry, I did not mean to mess that up. As well as JAMA Pediatrics, Journal of Youth and Adolescence Pediatrics. I mean, the list goes on. Now, Dr. Temple was also recently appointed to the Director of the Texas Department of Health Human Services, to the Vice Chair State Task Force on Domestic Violence. So this is one of the top guys who is looking at ending and preventing domestic violence in the state of Texas. Locally, he's the Vice President of the Galveston Independent School District Board of Trustees. So Dr. Temple, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me, Jerry. And wanted to add to my bio that I have a 12-year-old girl and a 10-year-old boy.
Oh, man. So you got one of each also.
I do, yeah. Once we figured that out, we stopped. And 2 years apart, just like yours.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah, our daughter's a handful. She's very extroverted, very creative, always trying to talk me into doing makeup sessions with her, ballet sessions with her. There's even a YouTube video floating around out there where she's doing a plie releve challenge with me. And I'm like, oh, man, gosh.
Nice. Who won?
Oh, she did, definitely.
Yeah, well, good.
She's got the training.
Yeah.
I do not. Gosh. And does your son do any sport?
Yeah, they both do sports. So my son plays baseball. My daughter kind of plays everything, softball, volleyball. Really into music right now as though. And something that makes me proud is she's listening to Nirvana and Green Day and The Doors. And so that's, familiar music in the house now.
Oh, wow. So you're raising them right, in a sense.
That's right. And she's learning to play guitar, something I never figured out.
Oh, man. See, I always hoped one of my kids would pick up music. I played tuba from middle school through college, and I always thought some of that would rub off on them. But
wow, you played in college?
I played a little bit in college, yeah. I originally went to become a music performance major, and in the last minute, I switched up things. I'm like, no, I can't save the world as a tuba player. And
but that's nice. What school did you get in?
University of the Pacific in California.
Yeah. Okay. I'm from Los Angeles.
Originally. Oh, okay. Cool. Small world, in a sense.
Yep.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on, especially since the topic for the episode revolves around Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month, and you are an expert in many, many ways on the subject. And in fact, we came across each other when we had done the Family Time Q&A had done an episode about teen sexting. And then you retweeted it, and I realized, hey, this guy, he looks like an expert. And I did just kind of challenge myself to interview some honorary Dugans this year. And so I reached out to you, and you agreed to come on the show. And so the first question I wanted to throw at you was, why is teen dating violence education important to have in our schools?
Yeah, I think it's even broader than that in terms of healthy relationships. So teen dating violence fitting under the umbrella of healthy relationships. And I think that education is central to raising good kids and subsequently good adults. And, we teach them how to read, how to write, how to do math, everything. But mm-hmm. One thing we don't teach them is how to be in relationships and what healthy relationships look like and what unhealthy relationships look like. And I think that we do a big disservice to them because that really serves as a foundation for everything, for being a good student, for being a good person, for being a good employee. I think we have to do a better job of teaching them about relationships. Now, violence specifically, we know that about a quarter of teens will experience dating violence before they graduate high school.
Wow.
So that's, a good 20-25% of kids are getting physically abused or psychologically abused. And so that's a good number. And the one big problem with that is, in and of itself, it's a problem because they're experiencing, more likely experience depression, anxiety, suicidality, going to not do as well in school, have physical health problems. So that in and of itself is something that we need to target and focus on. But also, even if you didn't care about that part, if you look at just the likelihood of continuing to be in unhealthy relationships throughout life, that kind of sets the stage. So if we want to prevent domestic violence in adults, a good place to start is dating violence in adolescence.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you also made the connection to, you know, even their professional career. I mean, there was a Forbes magazine article years and years ago about how the majority of people who get fired from their jobs is because of their inability to have positive relationships among their peers and fitting in with the culture.
Yeah, exactly. I think that is a really nice tie-in. I would like to read that article because it's something that I've been trying to emphasize with schools quite a bit in terms of getting in there and doing some good, healthy relationship education, is that this is the thing. So I'll talk about this here in a little while, but we have a program called 4th R. So the 4th R stands for reading, writing, arithmetic, and the 4th R is relationship.
Oh, yeah.
So wanting to integrate relationship education within the schools and teach relationships just like we teach other stuff. So with role playing, with skill building, and actually teaching them how to be in a relationship just like we teach them, you know, 14 divided by 7 is 2.
Okay. Kind of leads into the second question I had for you was, how can education in schools address teen dating violence, and what seems to be working, in other words? And you kicked it off with the 4th R on relationships.
Well, I think that we know what works. The difficulty with that is schools are overtaxed and over-resourced, and too many of the resources are being used as is. Teachers are overworked, and so they have limited time for add-on programs. So, you know, we know some stuff works. The problem is that when we try to introduce it to schools, it is either it has to be an after-school program, or if it's in school, has to take up valuable school time. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I like, and, you know, I don't mean to be a advertised machine for 4th R, is that it actually replaces the health curriculum.
Oh,
so
wow.
It meets the state and federal teaching standards for health, for the normal health curriculum. But while doing that, it's evidence-based healthy relationship programming.
When I was working with Women's Shelter of South Texas as a community educator, in fact, the health class is often where we would be allowed in because there was no TAC. What do they call them? The state test my kids have to do.
Sure, the TEKS.
Thank you.
And the TASTS and all that.
Yeah. So STAR testing.
I guess they do have TEKS, which is the education standards. But, yeah, a lot of times they're not state tested in health. Unfortunately, in the last 5 years or so, the Texas made a decision to no longer mandate health class.
Oh, that's
now,
right.
Despite doing that, a lot of the schools, most of the schools really individually have decided that health is important and either still offer it or even in some cases mandate it.
Yeah. And I remember being fortunate to be reached by teachers who, even though their school didn't have a formal program to talk about relationships or teen dating violence or you know, anti-bullying, they would still reach out to us and ask us to come in and do you know, some education with their students on a regular basis. So I always appreciated that. But those were the rare folks. Are there any initiatives to get this kind of education out into schools?
There are, and I would say that I think you're right on. The people on the front lines, the teachers, the principals, the educators, the counselors, social workers, they all know that dating violence is a problem and that we need to focus more on relationships. A lot of times their hands are tied by other mandates and, you know, just having to stay within the course curriculum. Now, that being said, there was a House Bill 121 that was passed, I'd say, a good 8 years ago now, which does mandate that all school districts provide some form of education around teen dating violence. The problem with this is, while it's great, is that it's an unfunded mandate. So here again, schools are left trying to do another program, but don't really have the resources to implement it. So, which I really think is you know, it's on us, you know, healthy relationship researchers and educators to figure out a way to make, to get into the schools and make it to where it is, it fits within their schedule and is not too taxing. So I think it's a real nice partnership that we have to have, people like me and you and the schools.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, with TASA, the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault, as well as Texas Council on Family Violence, there was a big push and still is a big push for primary prevention education. So local rape crisis centers and local battered women's shelters, it's kind of a little secret in these local communities that they have a small education team. It might be one or two people, maybe three people, yet they're equipped and trained to conduct those types of sessions. The challenge, of course, as you had said, is where do we fit them into the schedule? Like, you know, so we have that resource that's available, no charge to the school district, yet, you know, the school's investment is still giving up the time in the day to allow those folks to come in and connect with those students and deliver that education.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great, and I like the idea of those folks going in there, and I really like the idea of formalizing that relationship somehow, so it's not every year, because you know, I've worked on the board of the Resource and Crisis Center in Galveston, and you know, there's some, you have to do a lot of legwork to get into the schools.
Oh yeah,
it'd be nice to formalize that relationship and make it just part of the curriculum. You know, we do, you spoke about primary prevention, and, you know, if we could prevent, and I know it's kind of cliche, but even one instance of dating violence or sexual assault, just that one, even from just a fiscal standpoint, would be worth whatever cost it would be to get into that school.
Yeah.
Now, of course, it's more important than fiscal to that person's life and the course of that life will take if they're in a violent relationship or sexually assaulted. If we could prevent that, we would do wonders for that person and save a heck of a lot of money in the process.
And I just realized you and I are throwing around the phrase primary prevention because we know what it means. However, I just realized, you know, my audience has no clue what primary prevention is. And so,
you want me to define it? Or,
yeah.
Okay, So there's three different types of prevention for your audience. Primary prevention is to prevent the behavior, in this case, violence, before it ever ends up happening. And so that's probably the most effective way, because now we're preventing it from ever taking place and we don't have to react. So it's more proactive.
Mm-hmm.
Secondary prevention is identifying people that might be at risk for being in violent relationships have witnessed violence between their parents, so it's identifying them and then doing a prevention intervention program to those kids. Then there's tertiary intervention, which is the folks that have already been in a violent relationship and targeting them.
And I know a lot of, like, police intervention tends to be the tertiary type of prevention. It's like, okay, you've been a victim, here's how you don't become a victim again, or if we witnessed it happen to another friend, you know, then the school decides, okay, we just had this big, you know, horrible teen dating violence incident that happened. Now we're going to have an assembly and, you know, tell everybody how bad teen dating violence is and go get help from an adult. That kind of be more like the secondary prevention. Dig a little deeper on, you know, what kind of things primary prevention covers. I mean, I know it as, you know, going upstream and hitting those underlying root causes that allow violence to happen. What does that mean to somebody who, I guess, has never seen it or doesn't know what it is, or may be fearful of it? Because we've run into that and when I was at Women's Shelter of South Texas.
Sure. So, if we're going to, it depends on age, and mm-hmm. it has to be developmentally appropriate. If it's high school students who mostly have already started dating or at least thinking about dating, it's going to look a little bit different. It's going to be more about conflict resolution within dating relationships, that how to be in a conflict, because conflicts are going to happen. Conflicts are not bad. Conflicts are part of life and a part of dating. But how do we resolve those conflicts in a healthy manner as opposed to an unhealthy manner?
Mm-hmm.
With middle school kids who are also maybe just beginning dating or thinking about dating or maybe have not gotten there yet, maybe it's a little bit different, and we talk more about general relationship patterns and how you are with your peers and with your friends and potentially with your dating partners, and then and maybe some bullying stuff as a potential predictor of dating violence. And then if we're going to go to elementary school, then it's more about socio-emotional learning and about some healthy relationship with your parents, with your teachers, with your friends. So it all depends on where they are in how they relate to people at that particular time in their life, and focusing in on where they are and talking about them in a way, talking about it in a way that they can understand, really with that focus again on healthy relationships. Because if we can teach them how to be in a healthy relationship, then we can potentially prevent dating violence. And I will say that, you know, there's, you know, we talked about that statistic, 20-25% of teens are going to be in a violent relationship before they graduate from high school. That means that 75-80% of kids are doing okay. And that's pretty amazing when you consider the fact that right now they get very little education about relationships. They learn it through trial and error, which is not very good. They learn it through the media, which is really not good at all. They learn it through watching their friends, which is typically not good. Or they learn it from watching us, which may or may not be good. I mean, even if we're not in an abusive relationship, sometimes we don't do a good job as parents in displaying what a healthy relationship looks like. Even with the best intentions, say I get in an argument with my wife in front of my kids, we're driving, you know, everyone's going crazy, as probably a lot of your listeners can relate to. And I say some hurtful things to my wife says some hurtful things to me, all in front of our kids, and then, you know, we get to the house, the kids go their separate ways, and then my wife and I make up. Well, we make up away from our kids. Mm-hmm. So now our kids see how we get in a fight, but they don't see how we make up. So my point is, even us well-intentioned folks can do a better job. You know, we can make up in front of our kids so that they can see how to resolve conflict.
You practically described our typical drive to church. not every right, single drive right. to church, but I mean, we get a little pent up, you know, we got to get there on time. Let's go. But in any case, I'm glad you brought that up, because something that Liv and I had started doing a few years back was, you know, when we did have an argument, especially a big one, we decided that we needed our kids to see that we resolved it. You know, we might go behind closed doors and have the rest of the heated argument, but when we got to the resolution part, we realized, you know what? Our kids just saw us have a big fight. I think Emma is in there crying. Jacob's wondering if we can get a new dad. And so, you know, we do need to let our kids know that we resolved it. Yes, we had this argument, but this is where we went from there. And this is the part you didn't get to see. And so we've done that with them. We're not as consistent as I'd love to be. However, you know, when it's been a big blow up, I'm at least happy that we're doing at least, you know, that much at a minimum. So we don't, you know, go and tell them every resolution to every disagreement we've had. But on the big ones, we've definitely let them know. Yeah.
I think that's the right way to do it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Our hope was that, you know, they could see that, you know, couples that are committed, you know, for life like we are, you know, they're going to argue, and, you know, that's not going to be
a relationship.
Exactly. When you put two individuals together and they're supposed to act as one, you know, the reality is, no, they're still two individuals acting like two individuals. And so they're going to have differences of opinion, priority, and so on. And that's where those clashes come in.
I'd be worried about a couple that didn't argue every once in a while.
Oh, I know. It's, you know, yeah, because it's just a matter of time. They're either going to go separate ways or they're going to snap on each other. And I don't want to be around when that happens.
Absolutely.
One last question. I kind of wrote it as two questions. So when I was, again, a community educator with Women's Shelter of South Texas, you know, some school districts let us in, others were very resistant, you know, and it turned out it was the parents who resisted because they were afraid we were going to talk about sex. So we were talking about primary prevention, healthy relationships, the benefits that it has for teens as they go into adulthood, you know, not just with relationships on an intimate level, but business level. So for parents of teens who are listening, how can they strike up the conversation around healthy dating? And what are some do's and don'ts that you would recommend for parents?
Well, as parents if anyone with kids knows, it's difficult to talk to your kids about this type of thing. So but I do think it's important. And I think that one thing that we have to remember, whether we're talking about sex or relationships or dating violence or sexting, which I've done some stuff on, you know, it's not a talk and then we're over, it's over with. Mm-hmm. It should never be that embarrassing conversation where the kid can recognize it as the talk. What it should be is an ongoing conversation, and whether the kid is 3 years old, the conversation should start there. Now, obviously, age and a developmentally appropriate conversation, but it should be an ongoing conversation about respect for women, respect for partners, respect for other people. And, you know, as they get older, then you can talk more specifically about relationships and I hope also about sexuality and some more comprehensive sexual education. And certainly abstinence can be a focus in that and, you know, with the hope that they are abstinent, until they meet someone that they, are in love with, but, understanding that that might not be the case and that, have a truthful and comprehensive education about sex and relationships and violence and really just talk to them. Yeah. Even if they don't want to listen, talk to them. Or if you have a difficult time doing that, have them, you know, if something comes out in the media, like with Chris Brown and Rihanna a few years back before Grammys, where Chris Brown beat up, you know, use that as an opportunity to strike up a conversation. What do you think of that? And then, you know, listen for their answer and let them answer in full and then have that start a conversation about healthy relationships, respect for women, dating violence, and so forth.
One thing I've noticed some parents do is, you know, when the child does answer in a way that isn't quite what we hope to hear, you know, it's almost like they're admonished immediately by the parent, like, no, it's supposed to be this, this, and this. What would you recommend on that kind of response?
Yeah, I think you're right. And when we respond like that, then we shut them down. So they're not going to share anymore. Then they're going to give the answers that you want to hear. And so that's certainly, I think our normal tendency as parents to want to make sure that they answer the quote unquote right way and that we, you know, correct them right away. But that's certainly not the best approach. It's difficult to not do that, but that's, the better approach is to listen to them and maybe then say, well, here's what I think. What do you think about this? And so opening up a conversation with them.
Oh, okay.
And so treat them, you know, I think the adolescents and teens, they're smart and they get it and they know what's going on. And I think when we give them that credit, I think they're more honest with us and more approachable. It's when we treat them like little adults or little humans or, you know, then I think that's when we, when they figure us out and shut down.
Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely seen that where, yeah, when we treat a teenager like a stupid little teenager as opposed to a young adult who can think and can form, ideas and opinions. Yeah. They shut down. They go looking for the conversation elsewhere. And
exactly.
Something.
And that might also be okay too. Going looking for the conversation elsewhere. You know, if it's something beyond our capabilities, is let's get them to a person, whether it's a psychologist or a counselor or a website that can speak their language a little bit better.
Oh yeah, Love is Respect is one of the ones I love.
Absolutely. That's a great website.
I plug them left and right. They're actually hosting a tweet chat on my birthday.
Oh, nice. All right.
I don't think my birthday had anything to do with the planning, but,
I'm sure it did.
They said they're bringing cake. So,
perfect.
Yeah. I don't know how they'll get me a slice of it, but it's the thought that counts. well, is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap things up? Anything we might
know? I guess I would say that our recent study funded by the Centers for Disease Control is, we're in several high schools in the Houston area and we're implementing the 4th R program. So, we think it's going pretty well. The teachers seem to really like it. And if folks want more information about that, it's, www.youthrelationships.org.
Oh, great. Cool. So, yeah, if you're listening to this, I definitely recommend that, is it something people can grab and use with their children as well, or is it ideal to have in group settings, you know, in a classroom?
There's certainly some information there that people can talk about in terms of healthy relationships, but I think it's what that website and what 4th R is meant is more for school-based intervention.
Okay, well, I just wanted to clarify that for the audience so they can, you know, before they go running off and say, I do this at home all the time.
Gotcha.
It's like you only got to do it once with one kid. It was designed for a bigger impact. In any case, so we've mentioned a couple resources. the 4th R program, and I'll put that in the show notes. That'll be at therealjerrydugan.com/080, as well as Dr. Temple's bio. And you know, if anybody wanted to book you for a speaking engagement, what's the best way for people to contact you?
Thank you for saying that. I would say the best thing is to email me, and it is jetemple@utmb.edu.
Awesome.
And I'm also available on Twitter at Dr. Jeff Temple.
Yes. In fact, that's how I found you, and then from there we went to email.
Yep.
Awesome. Hey, I greatly appreciate you being on the show, and I think we got some good information out there for some parents to look into, to share with their teens, to have better conversations with their teenagers, especially during Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. However, of course, you and I probably agree that these conversations should not just be limited to February.
That's correct. Yeah, all year long.
Yeah. Yeah, all day, every day. No,
that's right. That's like, all we do.
That's where you're like, no, Jerry, that's too much. All right. Well, thank you for listening to episode 80 of the Family Time Q&A podcast. If you like what you heard, share us with a family member, share us with a friend, share us with that teenager that you want to broach the subject to. Oh, maybe not, because that might weird them out and they probably won't listen to us anyway. In any case, you can find the show notes at therealjerrydugan.com/080, and all the information that Dr. Temple's covered here in this episode will be found there as well. And you can also subscribe to us on iTunes as well as Stitcher, and feel free to call in with a question or some feedback at 361-434-0126. Let us know what you would have liked to have heard about in this episode, and we'll see about getting Dr. Temple back on. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode.